Jonah Hill wearing his Richard Pryor t-shirt, giving his teacher like loads of shit with loads of F-bombs, I still found particularly funny, and the penises drawings at the end are still hilarious.
So I was a fan of Superbad. I'd seen it at least once, possibly twice. I remember laughing a lot, and I thought it was a nice thing to revisit. And I am a big fan of coming-of-age films, films set over one day. So yeah, I was looking forward to it. Was.
Was. Okay, what happened?
Well, I think, as we might discuss, I don't think it holds up as well as I thought it did, in short.
Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of Flitzwater Podcast. Today I'm joined by Babs.
Hello.
Sophie.
Hello.
And Helen.
Hello.
And we are talking Superbad.
Thank you, as always, to the mighty people for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello everyone, welcome to this episode of Fix Watcher Podcast. Joining us remotely today we have Sophie and Babs. If you could please say hello and tell the listeners a little bit more about who you are and your podcasts, please.
Hi, yeah, so I am Barbara Mendes-George and I'm one of the two hosts of Over Underrated, which is a music podcast. So the way that it works is me and my co-host Fran think of a topic like a place, like Leeds, or a genre like punk. And we pick a band or artist that one of us thinks is overrated and the other one thinks is underrated. And then through a curated playlist, we try and change each other's minds, basically, because while we do have some things in common, we disagree on a lot.
Well, it's the catalyst for good conversation. So I've listened to a few of your episodes, and as a Manc and as a kid that grew up of the 80s, that grew up in the 90s and went out, I was looking at the Oasis versus Shed 7. Both bands I like a lot. So I was like, well, they're both great.
Then I can only apologise because I'm not a huge Oasis fan, as you probably discovered.
I could understand that. For me, there's diminishing returns for me with a lot of Oasis stuff. But the first two were simply like soundtrack to my life. But Shed 7, I do definitely think within a certain fraction of people haven't heard enough Shed 7. So I can understand that. And can you tell us about some of the other challenges you've raised against each other?
Yeah, so Shed 7, by the way, huge, pretty big fan now after that episode. I think some of the more difficult ones, I tried to convince Fran that Alt-J weren't overrated and I totally failed. He just thought they were boring, and I see him commenting about that on social media. I don't think I felt as passionately about anything as Oasis, but with the Manchester one, Cortinas was one where I think we were all just like, yeah, just they're a little bit overrated. Like we all agreed at the beginning, we all agreed at the end already. So sorry, Cortinas.
I don't get Cortinas at all.
I think we're all in agreement on that one.
Very good. I'm glad.
I think there's a certain subset of Manchester that really digs in, but I'm like, it's not for me. And you had on one episode, you're talking about S Club 7 versus Liberty X, which is why you brought Sophie in to talk S Club 7, which kind of leads into your podcast, Sophie.
Yeah, crossover. I'm Sophie Davis. I have two TV-related podcasts. One is called Smash Prawns in a Milky Basket, and it celebrates the work of Julia Davis. And then the other podcast, which you've already alluded to, is called It's an S-Pod Thing. And I'm basically rewatching every episode of S Club 7's weird TV show, and a different guest joins me to kind of analyze the madness of each episode, because it's a very weird show that we've all kind of collectively forgotten, even though it ran for about 4 or 5 years.
Weird is the word. I think definitely you picked the right word. I mean, I remember it existing, but I've never seen it.
So Helen, you must have been at university when this was on. Was this one of the kind of things you just kind of caught in glimpses when you were supposed to be studying?
Well, I had a gap between A levels and university, and I was actually working in the music shop around the time of S Club 7. So I would have been selling CDs to bright-eyed, bushy-tailed S Club 7 fans probably at that time. But I kind of vaguely remember the TV show, but as I said, I've never actually seen it. So it just sounds completely bonkers. Yeah,
that's the thing, they're still remembered. You know, the songs are still very much remembered, but the TV show, people have kind of forgot that it happened, even though there's 50 plus episodes of it.
And it's I've 100% seen an episode, but I can't tell you what happened in it. And yeah, the songs have lived on, should I say, and fueled a lot of my university life, you know, the pop night in university.
Yeah, cheesy pop night.
Cheesy pop night. And I do, in your episode, you talked about S Club 7 versus Liberty X. And Liberty X, I prefer them to Hearsay massively.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They were definitely, they were longer lasting and people don't necessarily remember that. But yeah, Hearsay was pretty much one album and out, really. Like, they did a few other things.
Was it one single even?
Yeah, probably. Whereas Liberty X were churning out some good tunes, I think.
Yeah, I think Sophie helped us uncover quite a few actually that we didn't know either. So that was really good to have a 10-track playlist from you.
Yeah, definitely underrated. Yeah.
Definitely underrated. And yeah, you were saying that it was difficult to remember the S Club 7 episode. So I also guested on Sophie's podcast. I can barely remember what we discussed anymore because it's so weird and has no storyline. So yeah, I think even you must forget sometimes, Sophie, the madness.
Yeah, they vary. Like, sometimes there's a whole episode and you think this plot's being very dragged out. And sometimes you watch another episode and it's got too much plot, if anything, because they have different writers for different episodes. There's no consistency. It's just, it's all very odd.
Well, talk about writing and plot and filming. We're talking about Superbad today, which is your choice, Sophie. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us, first of all, why you chose it? And then I'll get the timer up and give you a countdown, of which you've got to explain the synopsis in less than 60 seconds.
So why I chose it, I love Superbad. I never saw it in the cinema, but I had it on DVD when I was a teenager, which must have been not long after it came out. Like, maybe, well, it came out in 2007, so I probably bought it in like 2008 or 2009. So it was the right sort of time in my life, really, as a teenager. I've seen it many times, but not that much in recent years. So that's why I chose it for the podcast, really, because I felt like revisiting it to see if it still holds up.
Okay, and the timer starts now.
So Seth and Evan are two best friends about to graduate high school. They have another friend called Fogel, who's a bit of a third wheel. And when he tells them he's getting a fake ID, they basically agree to get a load of alcohol for a party to try and impress these two girls that they like. The story unfolds mostly over just one day, where initially they're at school. Fogel then goes to buy the alcohol after school with this terrible fake ID, which says he's called McLovin, no first name. And there's a bit of a misunderstanding where Seth and Evan believe that Fogel has been arrested in the store. So at that point, they go their separate ways. And for the rest of the night, Seth and Evan are desperately trying to get hold of some alcohol from anywhere for free. Whereas sort of unbeknownst to them, Fogel has all the alcohol and he's just kind of hanging out with these two cops for the evening. And then when they do ultimately reunite at the party, things don't go the way they planned with the girls, really. Oh, that was good. Oh,
look at that. Pleased just, with myself. Just under. Helen or Babs, you want to? What was your impressions of Superbad on this rewatch and your previous history with it?
So I was a fan of Superbad. I'd seen it at least once, possibly twice. And I was quite glad that Sophie picked it for similar reasons, really. I remember laughing a lot and I thought it was a nice thing to revisit. And I am a big fan of, you know, coming of age films, film set over one day. So yeah, I was looking forward to it. It was.
Okay, what happened?
Well, I think, as we might discuss, I don't think it holds up as well as I thought it did, in short.
any points there to make, Helen?
Well, I was just going to say, I definitely saw this at the cinema. I don't think I've seen it since then. I can't remember seeing it. So this is probably like only my second watch. My God, it could have been shorter. That's definitely the thing I'm going to come out and say. It definitely could have been shorter. I thought it was still very funny in places. But I think my mind had kind of blocked out the amount of time that we spend with the two particularly unfunny cops. And I enjoyed like hanging out with the kids, but like the time spent with the cops, I think the humour has not particularly aged well then. Although I couldn't remember whether maybe we're not meant to find them funny and we're just meant to find them dicks. I don't know. I couldn't remember. But Jonah Hill wearing his Richard Pryor t-shirt, giving his teacher like loads of shit with loads of F-bombs, I still found particularly funny, and the penises drawings at the end are still hilarious. So I don't know whether that makes my humour good or bad, or whether I've not aged very well.
And was it the cops you were thinking about, Babs, when he said not aging well?
Well, actually, it was kind of the language. You know, the amount of time they call people gay, talk about being a pussy, the fact that it's kind of acceptable in some ways to talk about, like, oh, she's going to be drunk so you can get with her. I was just like, red flags all over. I do agree that there are still some very funny bits. Those two sections, I had forgotten how amazing Christopher Mintz-Plasse is as an actor. Like, because I think I've only seen him really in Kick-Ass apart from this. And he just is the perfect awkward teenage nerd. So that absolutely still holds up.
He's in Promising Young Woman recently, isn't he? Christopher Mintz-Plasse.
Of course he is. Yeah, briefly. Yeah. You're right.
I don't know, Sophie, what are your thoughts? You said was in your introduction as to why you wanted to, you thought it was very funny.
Yeah, I think I still found it very funny. I think in terms of what you've said about the cops, I think I prefer the Seth and Evan side of things to the Fogle and the cops side of things. As you said, slightly overly long. They could have cut out some of the cop scenes, maybe. I think where it gets sort of the most iffy with the cops towards the end is when, you know, they accidentally hit Seth with the car and they kind of turn and become very threatening, like Bill Hader has got his gun out. And then I think if the film was made now, they possibly would have left it there. Whereas in the film as it is, they then come back after that at the party and are like the comedic characters again. And I think, yeah, if they were doing it now, they would have possibly like had them turn and then that was the end of those characters. Whereas they get brought back and are like, hey, let's break up the party. We're the funny cops. Yeah, I think, yeah, it's difficult. I think it hasn't aged as badly as some other comedies from that time. The bar is quite low. I mean, Knocked Up came out in the same year, like just a few months apart. Yeah. And I think that has aged a lot worse. And even like the 40-year-old Virgin was only a few years before that. I think that's aged a lot worse. So for me, I thought it still held up quite well overall. I would happily watch it again. You mentioned the kind of the premise of the we're going to get some alcohol and go to the party and then the girls might want to get off with us because everyone's drunk. Again, I think it could have been worse because the way it ends up is that, you know, Michael Cera's character in particular is very uncomfortable about the whole situation when it actually comes to it. And I think at the time that does kind of differentiate the film from a lot of other films where that would have perhaps gone ahead and it would have been a sort of funny scenario. With Evan, it is a bit more like he immediately feels like this isn't right, even though he gets drunk as well, thinking, oh, that will make it a bit more even. Even when he does get drunk, he's kind of like, yeah, this isn't really how it should be, and puts a stop to it.
Yeah, I can agree with that. And I thought it was especially good that Seth and Jules, they don't get together. I thought that was quite good because, it's sending them that message. But one of the last scenes, it's Seth pointing at her and going, I'm going to fuck her. Like he's mouthing, I'm going to fuck her. And I was just like, oh, it's like these entitled little, I mean, it felt a bit incel-y, you know, like it was just these teenage boys who I don't know, I feel had a bit of a, no, but we are entitled to these women. I may be exaggerating a little bit, but I was just like, oh, this doesn't fly anymore for me. Like I couldn't detach myself from that enough to really kind of find it funny overall. I found it more funny in parts.
I definitely prefer the Becca and Evan relationship because it is established earlier on as well that she does actually fancy him. Like when they're talking in school, it's very awkward. And he's almost sort of oblivious to the fact that she does quite clearly like him and is interested in him. And so the alcohol thing is kind of like, it's completely unnecessary for him, really. It's more Seth is convincing him that that's what needs to happen. Whereas, the Seth and Jules relationship is very imbalanced because she, you know, just in terms of like looks and, you know, popularity within the school, I think their relationship is a bit harder to get your head around. But yeah, as you said, they're not definitely together at the end. Hopefully they're just friends.
And I found Seth really annoying, like really, really annoying in a way that I absolutely didn't. Yeah, I was just like, I really wanted him to shut up. It's just like, oh, you look. Yeah, I don't know.
No, I think things like Promising Woman obviously held a spotlight on the taking advantage of people when they're of women when they're drunk in particular. So the aspect of in the first 5 minutes, there's that tirade that Seth has and his monologuing, and it shows how great Jonah Hill is as a comedic character. And this is the first time I saw him and remember him. I think he was in Knocked Up as well, but he's probably played a minor character. And like you said, him facing up to the teacher, hilarious. The way he intonates and his rhythm is brilliant, but the words that he's forced to say in the script, and I say forced, it probably wasn't forced to say, in some points we're just like, oh dude, that's not cool anymore. Like Babs is saying, the gay jokes and calling him Fogel, a derivative of, you know, I'm not going to say it now, because every time that happened, I was just like, yep, that's not cool.
I mean, it was the time. Like I remember people using that language, but yeah, it's funny how it isn't that old, but it jars already.
Yeah, and it's crazy how quickly that dates. But then there was some amazing, I mean, like they're ripping into Fogel when he gets the McClubbin ID. It's just pure, exactly what would happen if I was at school and someone did something that idiotic. It would have absolutely torn him a new one. So I love that interplay and banter that they do have. And some of that interplay and banter they do have, when it's talking about girls, is kind of what we did do when we were younger. So it's not savory, it's not kind-hearted, but it was kind of what people thought, that let's get drunk and let's hook up with people, because that's probably the easiest way to do it when you didn't need to. So as well as the Evan not hooking up with Becca because he thought he was uncomfortable with it, I really, really love the Jules and Seth bit where she was like, oh, I'm not drinking, I'm just here having the party for everyone else. If we want to get together, let's do it when we're sober, please. So I really love that kind of, I think that sets it apart.
And then she catches him crying a little bit afterwards on the drive he's trying to hide his face from her. That did make me laugh. I think Jonah Hill's really good. He's just kind of, he's got a kind of weird frantic energy. Like he's constantly kind of pumped up for some reason for like nothing in particular. And then obviously Michael Cera is like just quite sort of adorably awkward, and then Christopher Mintz-Plasse is just like an alien. Like I think I read they just kind of cast him from like a local high school. They'd had open auditions and he'd never been in anything before.
Oh really?
Yeah, and apparently when he auditioned with the other actors, Jonah Hill really found him annoying, like was like, you can't cast that guy. And then Seth Rogen was like, well, obviously we have to cast him now because that's the whole point, he's supposed to be an irritating character.
And we've had a few of these films. We recently recorded, I don't know if it's out yet, American Graffiti by the time this goes out, and also Booksmart, which are the kind of set in one night films. And Booksmart, I guess the direct counterpoint to this, because it's two female characters versus two male characters, and one of the characters is actually Jonah Hill's sister. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And have you guys seen Booksmart? And yes. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have. And I think that was maybe part of the problem. I couldn't help but compare it to Booksmart, which I just rewatched recently for a kind of virtual film club that I have with friends. And it's so much better. So much, I find it's just so much more sophisticated in storyline, but still very funny. Mm. I think, yeah, maybe it did cloud my judgment of Superbad, because even on second rewatch of Booksmart, I was like, oh wow, you really can't tell where this is going to go or how it's going to end. Whereas, yeah, definitely Superbad was an influence and a template, but yeah, it felt a little bit more basic for me.
Yeah, I like how in Booksmart, the kind of problem they need to solve is just to find out where the party is. Like it feels a lot more innocent, doesn't it? And just kind of like, I don't know, just a bit more friendly, like you, because you get the sense, even though they're kind of like the nerds, when they do get to the party, everyone is quite friendly towards them. And that is maybe a bit more reflective of high school nowadays, potentially. It's less sort of combative and like cliquey, I guess, maybe.
You hope.
Hopefully.
I think that was a storyline in the 21 Jump Street films, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. They were like, it was Glee's fault.
Yeah.
I think when Superbad is at its best is when it's kind of focusing on this kind of fallout of friendship, where basically Seth and Evan are realizing that actually they're going to be split up, and all that time they had spent together, whereas they kind of, in the fallout, he sort of says, you know, I hated it, but deep down they're actually at this situation where they're going to be moving apart from each other, and it's making them quite emotional about it. And then in comes Fogel to kind of upset that balance. So those kind of moments are actually quite sweet and quite relatable, and kind of it focused a little bit more, I think, on that than some of the other things in there, then it might have been a bit more rounded and might have had kind of maybe have aged a little bit better. Because when those three are together and they're kind of being teenage boys, although I can't quite work out what age they're meant to be, because they're all obviously different ages as their actors, but that's kind of when it's at 18. Its best. Yeah, well, Jonah Hill was 23 in this, so he's
I thought he looks very young in this.
I think
the way he kind of awkwardly walked.
I was horrified to learn that in this film, Seth Rogen and Bill Hader are 25 and 29. I was shook when I found that out. So there's not that big an age difference between Seth Rogen and Jonah Hill, because obviously the character of Seth is based on Seth Rogen, and when they were originally writing it, he was going to play that part, and then he became an adult man who couldn't pass for a teenager, whereas Jonah Hill is an adult man, but he can pass for a teenager a lot more convincingly. But yeah, what you were saying about the friendship aspect of the film, I think it's interesting how in the opening of the film, it's very kind of crude. You know, they're like talking about porn a lot. And I think someone, Evan's mum, I think, asks them like, oh, are you going to miss each other next year? And they're being very like, oh, no, I'm not. Yeah, I'm going to cry myself to sleep every night. Whereas at the very end of the film, they're basically like snuggling up together and talking about how they love each other and are going to miss each other. And I quite like that arc. And like at the very end, even when they're at the mall and then they kind of split away to hang out with the girls, they're so kind of dependent on each other that Seth is kind of like, I guess I'll call you then. Like they don't know what to do, like when they're hanging out with other people.
Yeah, I thought the scene where they're in the sleeping bags at, Evan's house.
Yeah.
Where he's like, oh, I love you, man. And yeah, we should be able to say that. That is quite touching. And I think, as you said, Helen, like if they'd focused on that a little bit more rather than the storyline, I also think it would have been a bit more well-rounded.
Okay, well, let's head to the scores.
I'm Sam Clements, host of the 90 Minutes or Less Film Festival, another podcast in the Stripped Media family, a podcast that celebrates movies under 90 minutes long. Each episode, I'm joined by a special guest who selects a movie to join our prestigious lineup. Past guests have come from the worlds of film, television, music, food, comedy, and podcasting. Search for us now on the app you're currently listening to this podcast, or join us at 90minfilmfest.com.
So welcome to the FlixWatcher scoring system. All of our scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish, and we will start with you, please, Sophie, with your recommendability.
I've gone for 3. As I said, I think it's held up okay. Because it's an adult comedy, there's obviously a lot of swearing, so I wouldn't recommend it to everyone, but I would recommend it to friends who are my sort of age and, you know, haven't seen it before and like that sort of humour.
Barbara?
I've gone for 2 because I still think it is sort of important in the canon of sort of Judd Apatow comedies, and there are some funny bits, but I think there's too much negative things for me to give it a bit of a higher score.
Helen?
Yeah, I was going into this kind of looking forward to watching it and remember laughing at the cinema. I do think it's far too long, and there's, as we've discussed, some things that haven't quite aged as well. I don't really know who I would recommend it to who hasn't already seen it, in terms of like anyone seeing it first time now would probably be a bit like, well, this is a bit, not sure. So I'm going to go with a 3 as well.
I'm going to go for a 3.5. I'd give some warnings. But yeah, it's not a blanket recommendation to everyone. Came out in 2007, which is, what, 14 years ago? For some reason, I thought it was like 3 years ago. That's how recent it's the time's passed a bit quicker than I remember it doing. So I think the thing with language is that it's aged that quickly, isn't it? In 14 years, we've gone from, I don't know, randomly throwing out gay curse words to now thinking that's not acceptable as a passing kind of joke, is it?
Yeah, I rewatched The Inbetweeners quite recently, and that's from a similar era, and it's a lot worse, I would say. It's constant.
Really interesting.
Is Inbetweeners worse?
Yeah.
I thought for some reason Inbetweeners might be better. Oh, I don't know. They had jokes about Neil's dad, didn't they?
Yeah, or it just casually, just like sort of insulting each other. Yeah, and attitude towards girls and stuff, but you could just say that is how boys talked at the time. Probably not all boys, but you know, that's kind of the argument really, isn't it?
Repeat viewing score, Sophie.
I've gone for 4. I tend to rewatch comedies a lot, more than any other genre of film, really. And yeah, I'd happily give this another rewatch in a year or so, you know, not every week. But yeah, I really like rewatching comedies like this.
Barbara?
I've gone for 1.5 because I feel like I'm not saying that I'm never going to watch it again, but I felt like I'm kind of done with it now, I think. But it would be, I think, as a period piece again, is why I put the 0.5 to in 10, 20 years time, you know, why not watch it again?
Helen?
Yeah, I'll give it a 2, 1 for each time I've seen it. Unlikely to go back, and quite unlikely to go back to the ones we've mentioned already, they've Knocked Up and the 40-year-old version, because I'm kind of like remembering bits of that. And it's just a bit like, oh, you know, time moves quite fast in comedy. And yeah, 2.
I can't see myself. I watched it quite a lot. I didn't watch it in the cinema, but it was one of those things where it was one of the stages in my life where I was still in my house or friends' houses would hang out quite a lot and Superbad would come on quite quickly because it's really easy to at least enjoy the first half hour together and everyone would be laughing at the first half hour. When it kind of split up, people could kind of flow in and out of the film if they wanted to. So it came on quite quickly, quite often. But yeah, going forward, when you suggested, I was like, oh yeah, okay, let's see how this holds up as a challenge. And better in some places, worse in others. But that means, I think, low repeat viewing. So let's go for 2.2. Small screen score, Sophie.
5, because I don't think this suffers from being watched on the small screen. I know some people really love watching comedies in the cinema, you know, because of the audience and everything, but that doesn't really bother me. I'm quite happy to watch a comedy film just on my own on the small screen.
Barbara?
Yeah, I went for a 4. As I can't remember whether I watched this at the cinema or not. I don't think so. I think I've only ever watched it on a small screen. But yeah, I think it was absolutely fine to watch on a small screen, and I also feel they didn't lose very much.
So it was at 4?
At 4, yeah.
Helen?
Yeah, a 5. Having watched it at the cinema and on the small screen, I think you're probably going to get the same level of enjoyment watching it on either.
Yeah, I think it would have been quite fun to watch in the cinema with other people, but I wouldn't go to Prince Charles to watch it now, based on conversations we've just had. So I'm going to go for 5 as well for small screen score. Engagement score, Sophie?
4, because this is such a kind of beloved film from my past. When I'm watching it, I feel like, you know, I'm thinking about all the moments that are coming up, all the kind of set pieces, and I want to carry on watching to see, like, oh, Joe Latruglio is going to show up in a minute and that sort of thing. So yeah. I've gone for 4.
Oh, there's a whole scene at the other party, which again, the first time I found it hilarious, but now rewatching it, it's just like, that is, there's no need for that. So yeah, that's another, that was a low. Sorry, Barbara, engagement score.
This one was difficult. I put 2.5 because on the one hand, I think I agree with Helen that it is quite long. And I think I was also probably from watching it on a small screen, not giving it 100% my full attention, especially after realizing like it hasn't aged very well. But I do think it does trundle along reasonably nicely. And yeah, I say Kobe as well. Yeah, I think it would be nice to watch it this and more with other people. I'm sure that would make it more engaging as well.
Helen?
I'm going to give it a 3. It really dragged for me, the extended kind of cop thing. It was like, I want to get back to the party. I want to kind of see them back together and, you know, not spend any more time with these cops. So yeah, 3 for me.
Yeah, engagement. I think the first half is better, aside from the language. And then it kind of does fade away a bit. So 2.3. And that gives us an overall score of 3.25000. Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah.
That's what I thought before coming in here. Should we head to Twitter, guys?
Yes.
If this is the first time you're listening to us, do follow us on Twitter. We are at FlixWatcherPod. One of the main reasons to follow us is because we've put a shout out before we go into the recordings where you can get your opinions heard as well. We put a tweet out like this. We're reviewing Superbad with S-Pod Thing and OU Music. Have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts and score out 5 stars for an on-air shout out. We had one response today. And Sophie, do you want to read out the response?
Yeah, this is from Space Castle Pod. They say, 5 stars, love Superbad. It's perhaps the last great teen comedy and it's endlessly rewatchable. Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg wrote an all-timer.
And that's great. Obviously, the two main characters are called Seth and Evan, because Seth, these guys, they wrote it when they were in high school, I believe, just to see if they could write a script. And then when they became a bit more famous, they said, well, let's see if we can produce a script. And they did. So in that kind of basis, I'm like, fair play to you guys, it's awesome. and, you know, power to them. But where's Evan Goldberg at the moment?
Isn't he making vases? That's what I see on Twitter. He's making like really impressive vases. That's all I know at the moment. Really?
Is that a lockdown thing?
Probably.
Do you know what his first Seth Rogen's first film was?
No, not sure.
Helen, you must know.
I don't. Not off the top of my head.
It was Donnie Darko.
Was he in that?
Oh, really?
Oh, he's one of the kids at the bus stop, isn't he?
There's one of the kids just hanging out with Donnie Darko. They're the ones that Donnie has to go about the Smurf and Gargamel to them. It is weird.
That Donnie Darko, definitely worth a rewatch as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Sophie and Babs, can you tell us where we can find your podcasts and say thank you and goodbye to everyone who's listening?
I'm on Twitter at It's Sophie Davis, and my podcast, It's Ness Pod Thing, is wherever you get your podcasts from.
My podcast, Over Underrated Music Pod, is also wherever you find good podcasts. And we're on Twitter at OU Music Pod, on Instagram at Over Underrated Music Pod, because you could have more space there. And I'm at Flame_Me_Up on all the platforms, because it's a song by a Belgian band that I chose when I was 15, and it's now my online identity.
That's how it happens.
Love it.
Thank you so much for joining us, guys. It's been great talking about Superbad again.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K, Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.